interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate change, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricket Tube Busting Episode BTWRLM 511. As we continue the saga of our societies around the world and what's going on with them. Today I'm going to move into something that's just come up. It's actually, I've been talking about it, but there's an actual study the military is doing, as I've been telling you, the military's involved, that was brought to my attention. And I'm not going to really be able to touch the depth of this. This is really something we people need to research and find out, see it the black and white themselves. I'm going to touch on some of this thing as we get into it, but to explain what we're up against. In part, what I do, maybe I'll get to those parts. There's so much to discuss in the subject matter. We're talking about cognitive warfare. I've been identified in its perception management, Edward Bernays, that kind of stuff. But it's what we're under, and it's a lot of times they'll tell you in these documents that the art of it is to make sure that you don't know what's going on. But some of us see the outward effects of things, but we don't realize that there's actually deeper applications going on. And I don't know of anybody that can really pick it all out, but it's there for us to see or watch and then to be responding to. Because they actually work in these documents to tell you about developing a paralysis in people, the thing I tell you, don't be silent. So I interestingly, as I was reading through this documentation, I find that what I'm offering is exactly what is their weaknesses, their Achilles heels, as I've told you before. And maybe not all of them, but some of them. They already know that they're there. Now, before we get to all that, we're in donation month, February, for RLMRealLibertyMedia.com. To pay for all the bills. We try to pay them all up front so we get going and we don't have to worry about it too much more. But it takes donations to do that. And this is probably the only time I ask for the money, what I do, and that's just to get the word out. We paid for the servers and the supply, the feeds, the broadcast, for the services that get the broadcast out to many people instead of just having to tune in to a file. Gets us on live, a little bit different. I hope you realize that there's no breaks on RLM, and that's part of what we're doing, part of what we do, as long as we can maintain that, and that's helped again by your donation. So if you go over to the Support RLM tab on the website at reallibertymedia.com and scroll down to the donations section or go donations at reallibertymedia.com, I think it jumps you over into PayPal. You can make your donation as you can. If you can't, fine, thank you. I appreciate if you send the message out. Spread the word of what we're talking about here. Not many people will offer the things I think I would say here. You're helping to keep that voice alive, even in your retweets or thumbs up, whatever, which we don't get much of. But we don't get a whole lot of anything. And I look very interesting who does get it. And I start to wonder, it's getting very hard not to look around in the world and say, you know, who are the change agents? Everyone comes by some authority, and we agree with that at some level, or even not. Again, you're going to find out here in this cognitive warfare that we're under, they plan on your paralysis. They try to get that paralysis. That's what I call the silence. And here behind the woodshed, we don't have luxury. Silence is not an option. So again, if you would, as you can, nothing stopping you donating the rest of the year, but this is when we just focus on it. We try to get the bills paid, get it out of the way, and then we get to focus on certain other things, like the important stuff. And it is so wide, what's going on all at once. And I just start looking at all of that and say, okay, well, they said it was coming at us. They said the deception was here. And so today, once I get past, again, 3 weeks old information, I try and point things out as we were watching them. I just can't get to it all timely. We're going to now transition a little bit in this broadcast into what we're looking at and possibly why. And then the possible why brings up all the so-called news, as I tell you, is the notice of something. If you understood you have the eyes to see it. And we'll be looking for other things than what we're being told, and other answers come before us. So we're going to need to know that as we keep running down. Again, this COVID swindle, to me, I thought was the perfect avenue for everyone because it touches everyone. It doesn't talk to a political body. It doesn't talk to a belief, an ism, an ist. It doesn't talk to a group of people. It talks to everyone. It infringes everyone. And there was, I thought, an easy way to out it. And if I get people to see it and they get practiced in how to respond, it'll set us up for how to do the next one that's coming and the next one and the next one. I think on the surface of this, with the economy going, it's really the target. It's been the target the whole time. Everyone's economy. They're going to make it, they'll cover it under, come under color of all kinds of different stories in order to keep you away from that. So that's underlying all of this. But you're seeing the economy being attacked. You saw Russia being attacked in their economy. This is a global attack. And I've explained how some of this, at least I believe I'm explaining correctly and accurately, what we're watching. And who the main player is on all this. And I'm going to try and do some of this, explain what we've been up against today. So before I get to that, and again, thank you for any donations you can bring, the donation of even putting a thumbs up, the donation of a like, the donation of a comment, the donation of a link spread to someone and an explanation maybe, and then the dollar, the buck. That keeps the servers, the people paid for the services we offer. I appreciate if you could send that to donations@reallibertymedia.com. We'd appreciate that at the network. But one of the things that I keep talking about in this war against us and the perception management that goes on kind of showed itself up, the weaknesses in that system if we engage it or don't. Well, at first, it's just ignore it, but they're not going to make that easy. So we got to have a better strategy than just the silence against it. They plan on it because your silence against it allows them to continue working on all those that will be amenable to the plan that we may or may not know. An interesting thing happened in a few days ago, which again, I just highlight. I highlight the frailty of the system they want, the Internet of Things. The battlefield Internet of Things, as we're told, and where we see an example of something going down. Twitter is down and not letting us tweet. It says users are over a daily limit. Twitter had a problem. I'm not really going to get into that. I just want to point out again and again as much as I possibly can. Consider the user are over our daily limit as a behavioral penalty in the future. As the government is now coming through the SEC and the other agencies to come after the exchanges and the cryptocurrency, again, they're renewing now. They're coming and they're saying they're coming after these areas. They don't want competition of their token, your token existence, with their governmental instrumentality through a third-party app. The manager, like MasterCard. Consider the users over their daily limit as that austerity they've imposed. As an insight, as to what happened to Twitter could happen and will happen in the future. As Elon Musk wants this Twitter to be an all thing, your whole life is wrapped around this, like a WeChat. Understand the control of that as well over in China. That when someone in the background says, you've had enough, it's over. For you, it's over. So I thought this was kind of interesting. That they had a problem, a glitch, but what if that was intentional? What if this is another notice to you to remove yourself from and avoid utilizing your phones, your technology that's coming as much as possible relative to a demand upon you? And we saw that through the Covey swindle and then immediately going to passports and all that. I'm not going to talk about all that. I was going to talk a lot about this week, but this other information came more important, I think, relative to looking into the future. It's coming too fast for me to keep up. And look at the future to explain what I think I see. People are going to have to see that for themselves and position themselves accordingly. So I'm going to go down that track. Maybe next week we'll hit a lot of this nonsense that's coming. The truth coming about the failure that we saw. And ultimately our failure to not protect ourselves, which is what I'm here to try and explain. We have abilities to make records to protect ourselves. And hopefully there's enough of us that those records aren't easily overlooked. And so, that one or two, it makes it a little more difficult. As I explained last week, excited, the comment, I put the letter in and that's not going to stop it. That's not going to stop this injection. No, it's not going to stop it for everyone. It'll never stop it for everyone. It will stop it for you. It'll stop it to the extent that you continue to have the substantiated word in your mouth, there's a due process breach. And that makes a lot of, it doesn't look like it, but it makes a lot of problems for a lot of these people. And you're noticing no one wants to speak about that. They all want to go run to the harm that they've been suffering. I see people, oh, you want to know about COVID-19? Go look at all these people. Go watch these people who now are finding after the fact that you were duped. And those people knew what they were doing. I'm going to tell you the information about the contract from the military really did its homework. It's very difficult to get out of. The only thing I can see, again, focusing laser-like into it, they committed fraud. And they committed fraud in jurisdictions where they didn't, at least the United States, it didn't have the ultimate power to make a decision at all. It's always supposed to be subject to the civil authority. You have to pull this stuff together in order to see the future has some still protection, but you have to be able to see that. But Twitter was down. And Twitter was down based on people got locked out. It was said that they had provided, they had issued too many tweets and that they broke the limit of the policy. None of that happened, but someone said it. As I've said before, the bureaucrats behind the scenes, in particular the controllers of the digital world, whether that's AI, which you're going to hear today, and the reliance on that, or not. Or someone coming in after an AI says, hey, there's a problem here, and manually taking you out because you violated some principle is on display here with Twitter going down. As Elon Musk starts to manipulate this thing, to me, it kind of got a little bit more free. I got more exchange. But now it looks like it's all going back to the way it was as far as my browser is responding to Twitter. In fact, they've changed some links. I had to change some links for bookmarks because they're moving their files around and reorganizing things. And when they moved the files around and reorganizing, it just reverted back to the original problems, the things I have to set my browsers up to block. Why I'm looking through a straw in Twitter, I don't really get the interaction. I've never experienced any kind of quality interaction with Twitter at all. So, but I understand that's a tool of the future. And it was almost a natural that Elon Musk would say, well, I want Twitter to, I'm going to buy Twitter for $44 billion, and I'm going to make it the all thing like WeChat. And your life is going to come through what I offer. And then immediately turn to direct democracy, sustainable direct democracy, to start making decisions in that platform. And then started messing around with the wires behind the scenes. And we start seeing the adjustments going on. But ultimately, it turns out to be the same. So this is a heads up for us. You were above your daily limit, whether or not you weren't, and you were cut off, is the future. As WeChats and all things and MasterCard, MasterCharge, all these other investment groups, debt investment groups, come in and act as the third party to your FedCoin account, to the instrumentality of the government, as the future moves through and attaches all these social things together. So I thought this was a pretty neat view. And then we also, before that, I was going to talk last week and the week before that, getting back to some of the old news, but something came up relative to Elon Musk, where I exposed the little story we got about South Korea and Elon Musk is underneath the scrutiny of the government for false advertising. And I'm observing here this is all perception management as well. And how they avoid liability is very important to watch. But there was another court case which I didn't talk about because I thought this was pretty well self-evident. And that was resolved by a jury to say that Elon Musk was found not guilty of fraud relative to some tweets he put out, which gave people an idea that there was some investment to make because of what he was saying relative to an investment and the value of the stock and all this. The people bought in, they put their life savings in, and this is the other thing. You got to start looking at what your responsibility to this is. And I looked at that and I said, well, it doesn't matter what he says. If you are to invest in stocks, you have this problem as an investor. You have a responsibility for due diligence. To me, this case wasn't even an issue. He had to go through it. He had to be found out that he can't. It's like election candidates. They can't promise you anything you can hold them accountable for. And so this due diligence obstacle for investors sits there, it seems to me. I don't know what the actual outcome was, but he faced the music, essentially, for getting people to invest in his stock, as he was saying the stock's going to go to 420. And that was an inside joke, 420, we know what that would possibly mean. relative to this thing coming and going private and all this. And people bought into that, but then he had a problem. And so they sued on that problem. Well, a jury came back and found that he wasn't actually liable. And I haven't really read any deeper. I just want to point out that he's had a way of absorbing that attack, and people lost money, and so you can too. He still has Twitter. It's still doing relatively fine, even though they're screaming bankruptcy. That's still a protection system within the system, relying on the system, so that you can continue doing what you're doing and actually offload some of your debt and keep going. That's what the bankruptcy is about. In other words, commerce in America is primary, and the government has allowed for businesses to continue, even if they're badly managed. And the only objective is, can you keep the books running and keep people keep the corporation in the profit? However that's done, whether that's tax code or not. But what I find interesting is the avoidance that Musk's lawyer said right before this case was decided. I found this fascinating because this is an insight of Elon Musk on what they will do, what they can say, the attorneys, what they will say in defense. It seems defenseless what you would think that they would do here. That you could actually use these words to actually be a defense. And yet this lawyer for Elon Musk did so. When I think the statement was just an example of what an attorney will do to avoid liability for somebody, putting you in the liability seat for what decisions you made on their word, and yet nothing will come up on it. But this Musk's lawyer for this case, he says, argues the false tweets were just, quote, technical wordsmith inaccuracies. You know, because the jury apparently bought that, whether or not they bought the fact that you have to have due diligence as an investor, I don't know. Remember, this is speculation too. This is the way this system works. It's all fraud in a way, in the beginning anyway. So hopes and aspirations is all this thing. Hot air, wild thoughts is all this whole system runs on at the stock level. But Musk's, this is actually brilliant. Musk paid a lot of money for this phrase. The technical wordsmith inaccuracies that Musk did was an avoidance statement to a jury, which apparently gave some weight, whatever my thoughts are, what the actual jury decision was. That Musk could come out and make technical wordsmith inaccuracies is no different than what you watch the government doing relative to its dancing around a point and never answering a question. Which leads me back to this perception management thing. And where you start to learn, you're savvy enough to sit inside, you're an active member of this deception, and you sit inside this window of protection. But you have an attorney that can say that what you said was a technical wordsmith inaccuracy, and that's sufficient to get you off the hook. I'd like to see us use that when we're under the gun of the government. And this is it's a truth what is said here, as outlandish as that defense might have been, that suggestion was, that all these folks, government, agencies, the military, can provide technical wordsmith inaccuracies and can't be held liable for it. And this is beyond any immunity that they would have as a sovereign, so-called. So I wanted to point that out. This was kind of an interesting thing. When I looked at that, I said, I think this case relies on something else. It has to do with the liability of the investor to do the due diligence on the investment. But to come out and say there were technical wordsmith inaccuracies without even mentioning the other possibility was pretty interesting in explaining what we can expect to see. I would have thought, based on that phrase, the jury would have convicted Elon Musk. This statement would have laid an egg, essentially. What laid an egg was actually going back into the trial and finding out that you have a responsibility as an investor to do your due diligence. In a way, it doesn't matter. The plaintiff seeking relief laid an egg in this issue. It didn't come to what he wanted, nor for the other people that were involved. So we see people how to protect. That's why I say some people may be jealous that corporations don't pay taxes. Because they have people that go into the tax code and they pull out every credit and every deduction they can do. It's quite a bit of work. I guess that's why the best get the best money. And you see these corporations actually get money back. I think people are jealous of that. It's telling you need to do the same thing, essentially, if that's the game you play, if that's where we're going. But a technical wordsmith inaccuracies was kind of leading this. I was leading myself into this discussion I was going to have for you today in a way relative to the perception manager, what we're told. All the stories the government comes up with moving it from private now into the public sphere. Before we get too far from the laying eggs, we had a whole bunch of stuff come through about this egg thing. Remember, this is about we were supposed to have food security. They promised all this food security back in 2010. What's driving this whole, it seems to be underlying this whole attack on us, is that we can go focus in on what they call sustainability, the UN stuff, the Agenda 2030. But again, that's an economic attack. But in the meantime, egg prices rose 60% in 2022. One farm group claims it's collusive scheme by suppliers. Now, I haven't heard any more information about this, and I haven't had a chance, and it's not too egg-citing, is it, this whole thing? They're just going to raise the price. But the point is we have collusion potential that is actually the cause. In the day of disinformation, in the age of disinformation, we're going to be hard-pressed to find out the real answers unless we have people out there digging into what's going on. And we're seeing some evidence of that relative to lots of different subject matters where it's coming out and showing that, I can't say these farm groups are innocent until proven guilty, but how about if we just go with the better narrative because it means our protection? We need to protect ourselves from this kind of a thing. But the egg prices have gone up. We're hearing astronomical prices in some areas. And yes, it has gone up. I think they're $5 a dozen in lots of places. I've seen pictures of 9 and 10 and 12. But what caused that? We had a whole bunch of stories in the news about what might have been caused it, but this came out pretty quick and kind of left the news cycle of a collusive scheme of farm groups, not just farm companies, but groups. Egg producers and food economists suggest a deadly outbreak of the bird flu has compounded into a significant supply problem at a time at a peak demand and higher costs for feed and transportation. So they have their narrative that they throw out. Again, narrative, I'm going to add the word heuristics because that'll come up in the military technical discussion. That there's an opportunity that was done and exploited by these egg producers. And so as a people, we're subject to the corporation, the private collusion that we cannot necessarily prove that I believe, well, since I see it in lots of other places, is likely happening. And I'd rather say, well, it looked like it likely happening because if we don't protect against it, we could starve to death. And this is just the egg thing. This is just a highlighted one. In my mind, this didn't even rise to a big deal, but it becomes a big deal, like toilet paper. The problem is these things are even manufacturing shortages means you're living with less. We also found people doing some amazing things during that time. The U.S. cracking down on egg smuggling. Entering the country from Mexico with raw eggs is forbidden, no matter how expensive they are in California. And so the government cracks down on egg smuggling, but doesn't crack down on anybody else infiltrating. It is an anomaly that is important. I want to point out, we're looking at a story. When I told you that you'd find the anomalies in the news, those are likely important, like things that are happening for the first time, never seen before. Go look at that. Go look behind that. And in particular, where they have the ability, these folks that are running this attack, have the ability to hurt us. We have to be able to move aside. We need to get out of the way, and hopefully we're far enough away that we don't get any backsplash. But U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials have warned Americans against trying to smuggle raw eggs or poultry over the border from Mexico, citing risk of disease. And skyrocketing supermarket prices drive normally law-abiding citizens to take extreme measures. And remember, I've told you, and we're going to touch this a little bit too, the Protocols of Elder Design. I'm not going to actually read it. I'm just going to have your mind touch it and say they know you better than yourself. They know your nature, and they run this thing through. So they come right out, and the government comes out to warn you what you're not supposed to be doing, as they also then do not investigate. And this becomes a theme too, a method. What's really going on? Why did the prices of eggs go so high? There's been times in history in the United States when the prices of things changed like they did or were consistent between people, sellers, that it caused the question by the government to go in and inquire whether or not there was a antitrust things going on. You're not hearing any of that here. No, they turn on you for smuggling eggs because they know that's what you want to do. You're going to make a profit too. So you're profit motivated as well. That's the other propaganda that's been going on in this country that I think is little understood. because it's a commerce nation, it promotes profit. Everyone's going to be an entrepreneur to do great. You're an even entrepreneur if you're in a nonprofit. That's actually the epitome of the entrepreneur in a commercial nation, is that you are actually not subject, in most cases, to what the other people are. But eggs cracking down on egg smuggling, unheard of, apparently, any kind of thing. Look at the drug trade. People can make a profit. And just because the price of eggs is really expensive, as a government, we're going to stop you. We're not going to stop all the other illegal immigrants coming in, but we're going to stop you from bringing eggs to feed yourself and others for whatever price. But this starts to tell me that they're not focusing. I'd better look at this a little bit more. I'm truly not interested in the egg prices. At some point, when it gets tough enough, we have to be self-reliant anyway. This is just pushing us there if we would just let it. And then we see this story come up at the same time, and I know this is a little bit old, but I want to just kind of go through this whole situation. If you go back 2 weeks and then 3 weeks, this was supposed to be all together in one broadcast with all those 2 and 3 weeks of tabs I never got to on end that were supposed to go to 2 or 3 points. I never quite finished. To that extent, I'm feeling that the broadcast is not sufficient, but I don't know what else to do about that when all this news is there to talk about, and I can't talk fast enough. Approximately 100,000 hens killed at fire in Hillendale Farms in Basra came up at the same time all this stuff was going on with the eggs. And, you know, everyone's looking at this like we were doing with all the fires and all the manufacturing plants and all this. What's going on? And always put in the back of your mind, understand the cyber attack thing. We don't know what's online in these companies that are vulnerable. Even the energy sector that was supposed to be the highest protected energy, the sector, commercial sector, transmission, oil pipelines, and that still got taken out. The Colonial Pipeline was our first notice there. The government's not stopping a bunch of that. In fact, we have maybe a little bit of an idea that maybe the government's causing a little bit. Why? Because this country is under attack. Lots of nations of peoples are under attack. Approximately 100,000 hens have died after a large fire in an egg farm in Basra over the weekend. Firefighters are called to Hillendale Farms at Schwartz Road. When they arrived, fire crews found a 50-foot by 600-foot operating chicken coop on fire. I mean, I can't even imagine the chickens there. It's amazing. That space and then all the chickens dying due to fire. This is interesting. When you find out, they were claiming that this wouldn't actually stop the egg production. This has got to tell you the infrastructure that's built to keep these industries running, how many chickens they can replace quickly. And this lends itself back to, well, if this is really not affecting it, and yet it did happen at the same time, what is maybe the real narrative? What's the perception management going on? What's the reality? What do they want us to do? What should you do? Well, also, at the same time, I was doing those reports before that showed you the back and forth of whether not even an egg was dangerous for you, if you remember the choline being involved. And they said the egg was the problem instead of the supplemental choline, which is the actual article subject matter. No, they identified the egg as the problem, right? As we've seen this stuff left and right, butter, fats, meat is all no good. This is the ongoing narrative. Well, eggs are now under attack again, and now you're going to pay more, and they're priming you to pay more. There's a different lot of reasons, but they want to focus you on the fact of supply and demand. If you look at the story behind this chicken fire, they said it's not going to really affect that too much. So there's a capacity in this country that's probably beyond anybody else's capacity, especially when you find a lot of companies come here to buy things, like China buys the pork farms and the ranches and all that stuff. Whether they're doing that for a military advantage, I don't know. Why the government gives them the free enterprise zone areas, I don't know. Again, this is just there's an attack going on in the people of the United States of America. If what vector, I just look at them all as a vector. To do what appears to bring us down into something sub-American, if you will. Something sub-due process, sub-rights, sub-property, essentially property. You'll have no property and like it type stuff. And there's an infrastructure built in, a cancer already in this country to fulfill that. Then we see at the same week, chicken egg yolks, antibodies, YGYS, block the binding in multiple SARS-CoV-2 spike protein variants to human ACE. And so in the back and forth of what I was telling you before, that they're denouncing the benefits of eggs and what they have in them. And if you look closely, that wasn't the egg at all. It was just that it has a component, the choline, in an egg, that when you have that as a supplement, and you can overdose in it, essentially, and it causes trouble. It's not what an egg does. It's not what you do when you eat even a three-egg omelet, which at this point, you're a rich man or woman, I suppose. Unless you do something else, which is coming here, but somebody is taking an interesting exploitation upon this, if we're not thinking. But here, we have chicken egg yolk antibody to study. A block binding multiple SARS-CoV-2 spike protein variants to human ACE2 receptors. Or understand, the SARS-CoV-2 is an invented, it's a novel agent. I can't even call it a virus, because there's nothing that exists in nature that this was made from. This is a string of proteins. That's all DNA is, a string of proteins that actually identifies a spike protein, not an organism. And apparently, egg yolks have the ability to fulfill the receptor site and fill it up so that you can't be affected. How interesting is that? Let me offer, don't just eat egg yolks. The white of an egg, if you could do some study, they balance each other. If you eat one over the other too much, it can cause some trouble. But you should eat a balanced diet, so eat the whites with it. At any rate, interesting little study. SARS-CoV-2 virus is still spreading worldwide, so this is perception management, and there is an urgent need to effectively prevent the control of this pandemic. This is perception management. Neither is happening. The study evaluated the potential efficacy of egg yolk antibodies as a neutralizing agent against the SARS-CoV-2. And so where they take this and they look at it blocking the receptor, if this is true science, this makes an interesting help to show how valuable eggs are relative to the stopping most insults to the body that affect this ACE2 receptor. And it's an interesting thing. I talked a little bit about this, just to touch it, years and years, years ago now, when this thing was coming on, explaining what there was out there in order to cover this. Well, a nice healthy diet apparently does that. But now the healthy diet, now they're making the price of these things up to the point, it's almost the price of medicine, the exorbitant medicine they say that will cure you, such that they claim is in a jab. But people, within the face of all this attack and the high prices, and you see people will go to smuggling instead of just doing something else, and the government's quick as a bunny on that to stop the eggs, or maybe Easter bunny, on the eggs, and they will stop you, but they won't stop other things invading the border. Is an anomaly. We can solve some of that ourselves, and what have we said behind Woodshed and in lots of other places, become self-reliant. Maybe it's time to start making your own chickens. The government shouldn't attack the people and their chickens. There's a joke about this, but I won't go through it. It's known well, you don't attack the people's chickens. Chickens are a pretty universal and interesting creature. Likely one of the only few that transmutes minerals, too. Kind of interesting too. Anyway, somebody's jumping on this ahead of time and trying to get ahead of this. And I just wondered about some of this. I thought it was kind of interesting. I didn't understand how they would make it work, but if you need to get some chickens quick, you can rent the chickens if you're in Texas. Rent chickens. The Texas residents have a chance to have their own eggs. And I said, well, that's kind of interesting, but how are you going to actually make a business renting chickens? And so for a couple of weeks, I didn't have an answer. This article kind of gives us an answer, if it's an answer. And this is the thing that starts to get me to wonder, what's going on in our heads as a population? Again, maybe it's common core math. We can't figure stuff out. But I just want to touch this very lightly. Okay, you don't have price of eggs going up. Why don't we make our own chickens? Well, someone's going to rent you some chickens if you don't have the place. Sounds kind of neat. They even provide the whole thing, the bowl, the food bowl, the feed for 6 months, the pen, and everything else. So my thought is, okay, that's cool. Let's grow chickens. They're not that difficult. They take a little bit of work, like any other animal. What is the cost of this? How is this viable? I couldn't understand how someone would do that, make this viable. Well, we got the answer here in this article. The basic two chicken rental with all the stuffings to grow eggs with chickens for 6 months is $535. $535. Now, my mind just quickly said, well, that's for 6 months. I don't know that a chicken makes that many eggs, is what my mind said. And when you go back and look at it, yeah, the chicken can't make that many eggs to make that price up. So, but without getting to the more math, I mean, we're looking like maybe if a chicken would lay every day, which they might or may not, you're not going to get but 180 eggs or so. Is that right? Six months? Six egg, 30 eggs, if you use 30 times 6, 180, you're not going to get the kind of money for the eggs. So I didn't understand this one. But that did seem like an exploitation. Neat idea, but you're paying over double. So this is priming us for wanting to pay more and working hard to pay more for the eggs. At the same time, we get the notice from the government. Didn't help stop the problem. No, with all this food security laws, the modernization laws, didn't stop the food insecurity now. No, they're going to go after to tell you, to scare you off, when you have the right even to rent two chickens for $535 for 6 months. High egg prices may tempt you to start your own backyard flock, but chickens carry some health risks. So right out the gate, and this is not untrue, chickens are wild animals. I mean, they're domesticated animals. They're animals. They don't care for themselves necessarily. They're in the wild, if you will. If you're keeping them in the wild to make them the best and healthiest, they're going to be predated by all kinds of things. And there's lots of organisms in the world, bacteria and fungus and all that will inhabit them as well. And so this is the big scare tactic. If you keep up with the chickens, maybe it's not so bad. Doesn't mean you're going to escape from a potential problem, but chickens can spread bacteria is the big warning here. Just at the time when you're looking around to see, well, how am I going to solve this big egg, this expensive egg problem? I guess the whole point in all this is look at the dynamic of where the government positions itself and what it tells you as it's moving along and the things that you need to do, and consider whether or not they're looking ahead of you and keeping track to keep you confined and use these opportunities to send their message out to condition a response to you in you. Your behavior gets somewhat controlled. But that's what they came out with, just to let you know chickens can spread bacteria. Not a lie, but maybe it's not the threat that it would be. They want to talk about salmonella. Well, it's all over the place. Okay, so you have birds, you're likely going to have more. I want to offer the other problem, so-called bird flu, is going to be another vulnerability they're going to put up. And when they do this thing, they carry bacteria, along with it is the idea that the so-called bird flu is there, and they're planting the seed. When their authority comes around that says an area has a bird disease and we have to cull your chickens, your couple chickens aren't going to mean anything if they can lose 100,000 in a manufacturer. And we've heard that they're willing to cull millions. So to me, this is another angle to sabotage that's underneath the federal law in the United States. And it's a crime. And if we don't start working out how to expose these people for doing this under the color, we have the Comey swindle tells us they'll do fraud. They'll say there's an infectious agent that doesn't actually exist. So we have the evidence to track it back. When they start coming for our food and our chickens, the ones that you think you're avoiding the high prices and all, and they tell you up front that they're full of bacteria disease, they're priming the pump to make you the evil villain when you decide to protect your chicken. And all you're trying to do is feed your family. But what they will provide, we find out, well, the chickens are out there and will eat every bug in the field, and they're good at eating bugs. They're good at tearing up the ground. You don't really want them around your garden much because they'll tear that all up, eat all the greenery. They're good at all that kind of stuff. They'll leave their fertilizer for you. They don't want you to have a chicken. They want to scare you to keep a chicken, because what they want to do is they don't want the chicken to eat the cricket. And the cricket is what they're going to allow you to eat, as we see here. The house cricket's allowed as food in the EU. So they don't want you to eat the meat or the egg. They'll scare you about all that. But they're going to just embrace feeding you crickets and pizza and pasta products. I think this is fascinating. They don't want competition. They don't want the chickens because the chickens will eat the bugs. The bugs are crickets, and the crickets are going to be used for your future food, which they will agree to. Now, I haven't seen any studies. I'm about waiting for them. How the crickets eating crickets. That's you folks being silent. How the eating crickets. You call it Soylent Green in a movie. How the crickets are going to stop, plug up an ACE2 receptor so you can't get sick from their poison. We haven't seen any of those studies yet, but I'm kind of waiting for them. Partially defatted and powdered house crickets will officially be able to find their way to EU citizens' tables starting on January 24th. Wow. Pretty cool, huh? Oh, that's been last month almost. See, it's already on the roll. As per the decision, which cited the scientific opinion of the European Food Safety Authority, the additive is safe. The additive is safe to use in a whole range of products, including but not limited to cereal bars, biscuits, pizza, pasta products, and whey powder, whey cool. Back in August of 2021, the European Food Safety Authority concluded that, quote, frozen and dried formulation from house crickets, close quote, are, quote, safe under the proposed uses and use levels, close quote. Wow, use levels. It'd be like, you don't want to overdose on this like choline, right? Because we'll blame eggs again. A little under the use levels is a serious problem because insects have things in them that our systems don't like so well, if I have my study correct. But nope, they're going to kill your chicken. They're going to kill off the egg. They're going to make it high price so you can't afford it, but they're going to authorize crickets, the thing that the chickens eat, in this press for altering your behavior and putting you into what they call more sustainable food systems, which are actually not sustainable for you, won't sustain you. Because sustainability is a term. It's a thing. It won't sustain you. It would actually probably poison you and reduce your system, your body, in response to something that's also controllable. And remember, they called these mRNA jabs safe and effective. At the same time, they're saying an egg is not safe and effective. Unless the effectiveness is that it gives you some problem. So again, we're looking at an anomaly in the system. It makes no sense, and yet we're listening to it. Ongoing programming, ongoing planting of seeds in people. And you might think through your brain what you think is going on, but they're not speaking necessarily to you. They're speaking to everyone else that will listen. And I'll tell you, those numbers of people are, well, they're indicative of how many people did get the jab. That's how many people, that's all that they have to talk with. You become incidental in your resistance, and then as we'll see as we'll move on here, the programming that's gone on is understood to gain your paralysis. And so this is, again, the perception management through words, through the protections, through you're looking at a world, there's some people protected and some people not. Stop making sense. No one does the investigation. When they do, that doesn't make any sense. And we don't understand it as we're moving along. There's a whole other, if you will, agenda going on that's moving the whole of society into a new place. And it, in a way, when we get to this next information, it's almost as if a bunch of people are really afraid of the world, and they're protecting against that fear that they're creating. That's not to say there isn't real, there's other people that want your stuff. Part of the invasion of the borders of the United States is not just that people want to live in America like we were told, this is a great place to live. Don't laugh. I mean, there is some things about it that are really unique, but the people haven't held up to it yet. But that there's actually an affront, there's an attack utilizing those people that would like to be in America as an invasion force on top, another level. And that's another political attack as well. So these things seem to be intermingled with a way to diminish the United States of America. And I'm going to say the people are letting it happen. I really am disappointed of our response as a people to the COVID swindle. even if you were bought into the fact that, okay, we'll just give, you know, it's a cold, it's an emergency, let's move that. It went quickly to a place that was nonsense. And I explained at that time how we could identify it without an opinion. We'd stop looking at the emotional side, which they spoke to, look at the authority side, because that's the government coming at you. There was no other option for us. And I say now and still, that's going to give us a measure of control as we watch. Now, even the military coming to terms with the power that they've been wielding, because I suggest it's been happening since before 9/11. We saw it with the anthrax. It's all in the same thing. It's where the military really started to figure it out, had figured it out. And it was, like I said, my response to the 9/11 towers was they went and done it, because there was a few years right before that they were talking about doing it. They it ends up being the military, I believe, then, and it's the military now, clearly. It's the same group. Where these folks got the idea they could pull this off, contrary to the law, essentially, that means nothing. Contrary to even the second system, the military is not the primary system in the United States. The civil authority is. How these folks decided they could attack the people of the United States, I don't know where that came from. That the people of the United States allowed it, and then allowed it again in hindsight, Operation Hindsight 2020, is an amazing to me. But the perception management is strong. And we see the evidence of it being used and changing society in the civilian side. What we're looking at today, I believe, and I've been saying it, nothing new, is we're looking at the military now grabbing it on and coming to terms with the power that they now see. And so I've got a series of articles that were inspired by someone, I assume inspired by looking at this perception management thing, that looked at NATO. And thank you to Sound Minds for looking, again, taking the initiative and bringing this forward. And sent me a bunch of links of this finding that I want to touch base on. I think this is very important. It speaks to today. It speaks to the perception management of the past till today and into the future. It also speaks to the limitations. As I analyze the Protocols of Elders of Zion, something that destroyed me in my mind, I said, if they know me better than I know myself, there's no place for me to go. And yet, they have weaknesses. Is these documents I'm going to go through that I think are important enough that you get the links? I'll read some of the text of it. We'll go through some of it. There's so much here to learn. It's almost a map of how they plan to do it. But I also see they're just coming to terms with it now. We are not out of time on their implementation of neurocognitive warfare. The first article I'll start to discuss. In part, I'm going to read things here from articles what highlight the object of what they're after. There's so much to reference here outside that you bring to bear to this subject matter, that is an immense discussion that we could have, that I just cannot cover here. Moving into this, what have we been suffering? What is this term, you know, this attorney for Elon Musk coming up and saying, oh, this was just technical wordsmith inaccuracies? It speaks in this subject matter here of neurocognitive warfare. And so I'll just touch a little bit of that, because I think this is important. When you start seeing what these people are writing down as they're coming to the military, the analysts of the military operations, the people who appear to want to do good by the United States and anticipate what the United States should be looking for, or the United Kingdom should be looking toward, as they place the narrative into an attack by other nations, let's say like Russia and China. You actually look at it and say, these people, if you just put the United States as the adversary instead of them writing about the adversary being someone else, the other, you start to see the plan that's written out that the government is coming to terms with, that they've actually been doing all this time, and partly how I've been able to watch it, even if I didn't know the military jargon for it. Why? Because they didn't understand some of this until just recently, and you're going to notice that. They're just now writing about this. And yet it's been known, the perception management has been known. In fact, they agree in all the articles, it's not unknown from ancient times. And it comes in so many different forms that I thought understanding a little bit of this is going to be important. I think because it's now, I don't see how it's beyond question, the military is involved in attacking the people of the world, the United States military, in different ways. That we're looking at perception management on so many levels, it's not even funny. That's why there's so much news. It's just coming as an overwhelming tidal wave and tsunami. And we're going to have to figure out, I keep telling you back, as analyzing what I've been saying to you, you're going to have to step back and you need to give yourself distance against this because they've got the momentum. They've got a lot more people working on it. They have their own narrative they're building. It's a false narrative inside what they're doing. Is also, they're like prepping themselves for their own false condition they're going to apply to you. And they're looking at certain weaknesses and how to exploit them, whether they're the aggressor or the one as a defender. And this is a fascinating multidimensional view when you start looking at it. Almost, I guess it would be a study of its own. I don't get that deep in it. But you need to understand the basics. That the government and the military has gone there, is going there. They're reorganizing themselves to get the discussion more coherent so that they can get more efficient. And they have to. As you start finding out things and you start seeing the anomalies, as the lies continue, and you start to understand why the lie exists, and that's a lie, and then why it exists, they need to keep ahead of that. They need to keep doing what they'll tell you in all this document. They need to keep underneath the perception of even those that would be looking, maybe like what I do. They need to keep under my perception of their existence to be able to tell you about them. They're even cognitive of that they need to do. And that's showing me, when I read these documents, that shows me the very deep level of someone's really thinking about this. And when you look at what the contracts that are being brought out, the agreements that were done between the military and Pfizer and the universities and all that, and you start looking and understanding what they did, you understand that the military looked at this and they knew what they had to do to make it look. They knew they had to make it look different than what it was. They knew they had things to avoid. They knew they needed like the Russian nested doll protections. Someone premeditated that. You had to know you had to avoid that in order to be avoiding it. These things that are in these contracts. To keep everybody plausibly safe. And the only thing I can tell you is that you need to step back and say, yeah, but this was all fraud, first of all. Secondly, who gave the order to attack the American people was not a civil authority. There's no authority within the United States to do that. And we, the people, have to really start coming to terms with that. That's an answer I don't have for everybody. I don't know how we're going to come to terms with it, first of all. But they are coming underneath even those of us that may see. They need to come underneath our scrutiny. So far, well, they've missed doing that with me on certain things. What they're doing it on me and other things I wouldn't know because they would have been successful. That's one of the objects. So when you start to learn to see, you have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. They know that they need to be able to camouflage themselves even from you. And these documents are predicting that future. They're working there. The first document is kind of the worst one, and that's why I'm going to lead with it. It's where they're broaching the idea of technology. Wave electronic electromagnetism and sonics and things like that in order to control your mind directly. And yet as we move through the tabs, we find out they're just barely coming to the terms of the fact that they need to do it. It's a new dimension in warfare. But I'm suggesting to you, they're already doing it. These documents are just kind of they're lagging a bit in what the military has already done, and we see the evidence in the Covey swindle again. And in part through the work of the women that we had, I mentioned, Catherine Watt and Sasha Latipova. They're bringing out the background contracts to explain who is involved. It's not a question. As I said, we would be looking as a society against the worst national security attack that a society can face. And I was hoping we would stand up correctly, but we didn't. en masse. Even though we didn't, even if we didn't agree to the jab, we didn't stand up against the problem. And today, that problem is still festering. It's still moving on. And it now becomes a point you almost start to look at, well, I think I'd rather, because of the government, it can't be trusted. See, that you'll hear here. They know. They need to keep your trust. It's stated. I better get to it real quick. They need to keep your trust. But if they lose it, then who do you respond to? Would be better, anybody with a different idea that starts to point the finger at anybody, typically the government, when you can see who, again, cui bono, who was it that's going to benefit? Cui bono. Who benefits? I'd rather look at the people that are having a theory, even, of who would benefit and how they accomplish, as we see some stories coming out here this week, relative to this, than to believe the government anymore. Once they lose your trust, that was their only job, and they'll tell you that here, over all the words I'm going to read here, and I better get to that. Once they lose your trust, it doesn't then relieve you of your obligation to not be paralyzed. Because they rely on that too. Like I told you, silence is not an option here. Your inaction is not an option here. Let's read it now. We'll go through a bunch of text. I'm going to cut through some of this. I'm not going to read it all. It's going to be quite a bit though. But I want you to sense as you're hearing this and where they are, what they are, what they're relying on, what they've been relying on, what the context might be. When you see the basic statement, who can use that? Is it being used now, notwithstanding the questions that might be laid bare here? Written by R. McReight, Neurocognitive Warfare, Inflicting Strategic Impact Via Non-Kinetic Threat. Right, this is now your informational warfare. This is your attacking people directly through psychotronics, if I can use that term. Electromagnetic waves, as I tell you, the devices that you have, they even tell you in this document, I hope I get to that point, they tell you that they need these devices in order to pull that off, just as I've been explaining to you. And this is a new front and a new field. They're having to learn and deal with as they say they have an adversary that they need to deal with that's going to use it, and I'm going to suggest, why don't you just consider they're already doing it? That silence is actually the point. In other words, when they don't come to protect, that may say something, and I think it does. When they have an obligation to protect and they don't, maybe that's they're doing it. So, reading on here, starting the process of a bunch of text, a lot of things here. Cognitive warfare. You know, there's a broadcaster who wants to say the information is the war of your mind. This is what this is. Perception management. But this is more aligned with the military. What is the strategic value of a covert technology that has consistently displayed a capability to disable and permanently impair basic thought, perception, and inflict degrading effects on human neurocognitive motor skills? It is significant, but far less than strategic, non-kinetic yet still strategic in impact. What if an adversary intending on harming United States military and civilian leadership could unleash and deploy this technology without fear of detection? What if that adversary knew the U.S. targets had no way to protect themselves from the insidious effects of this covert technology? This is neurocognitive warfare, which has been taking place, which has been taking place. Can I repeat this, please? Listen, this is neurocognitive warfare, which has been taking place during the last decade, and which allows an aggressor to attain the degree of strategic leverage and influence literally without firing a shot. The U.S. military experts in C4ISR, electronic warfare, psychological operations, and medical science ought to be aware of this and study it assiduously to gauge its genuine threat dynamics. We do know, the United States government has officially devoted serious high-level attention to the issue based on recent statements and testimony by senior Biden administration officials. Now, the threat issue has expanded beyond its origins several years ago, and it's manifests itself closer to home with the reported instances recurring up until the present day. I need to interject. I'll interject periodically, hopefully not really so much. I want to just read through this. I anticipate the United States already does it and knows. They're writing this in order to bring out a discussion because another entity is coming, and we see that in the next part. and this was the inspired part, NATO, is moving in the world. And these things are a part of what they're doing, which has already been being done by the United States. There's also a reference in another document of many years, 25 years this has been going on. Does that sound like prior to 9-1-1 just? Anyway, getting back to this now. Cognitive warfare context. This article is written in a context, and we can focus on it, but let's not be so constrained by what they say here to eliminate other conditions and factors. Right to the point of the inspiration, NATO members. Understand, the United States is NATO. You have to understand, they use the word NATO like a nested doll. It's a cover corporation, a cover organization. United States is NATO. In NATO, it is NATO. It's the influential member. It's a cover organization for the United States. So we say NATO, you put in your mind United States as well. NATO members have been wrestling with scope, scale, and definition of cognitive warfare for a while. Yet the issue still takes a back seat when compared to with advanced weapons in the urgent calamity of the war in Ukraine. This is despite overwhelming evidence that the sixth domain of warfare itself, the human body and the brain, are what we're dealing with. We already know from the voluminous combat experience of PSYOP, intelligence, information ops, and electronic weapons that certain narratives, psychological messages, and sustained influence campaigns in social media and propaganda can exert significant impact on the human thought, behavior, and beliefs. Cognitive warfare is best seen as a genuine covert blitzkrieg on the mind and its associated systems. Text drawn from the NATO study, NATO study, North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Quote, the brain will be the battlefield of the 21st century, and quote, humans are the contested domain, close quote. The report also said, quote, future conflicts will likely occur amongst the people digitally first and physically thereafter in proximity to hubs of political and economic power. Quick interjection, political and economic is conjunctive. That's what we've been talking about behind the woodshed here recently. This is an economic attack that's transforming the politics. If we were to apply the United States definition for terrorism, when they do something that affects that politics, that's terrorism. You can read it for yourself. Moving out into this. This study was done in the context of the electronic attack, the electromagnetic, the sonic attack, by referencing the Havana Syndrome, using it as a context here in order to discuss the importance of this, of the understanding these technologies and how they adversely can affect people. The technology is insidious and consistently defies detection, prevention, medical verification, and scientific confirmation, aside from episodic reports that an anomaly has occurred and impaired the neurological and cognitive well-being of its intended targets. This novel neurocognitive non-kinetic weapon with indirect strategic effects in the 21st century, I term it as neurostrike. Neurostrike. The very nature of the joint all-domain combat environment has changed drastically. Familiar notions such as C4ISR, situational awareness, and the OODA loop are all in collective jeopardy as human thought, decision-making, judgment, analysis, and perception are at risk in an unrestricted cognitive warfare environment. The basic principle of a suggested neurostrike weapon is a fairly simple proposition. It entails a handheld and platform-mounted mixture of an RF, directed energy pulse, or neurocognitive disruptor, and combined with an acoustic wave dynamics, which is designed to harm, disable, or permanently damage a human brain. The potential of neurocognitive disruption and disablement of human brains via remotely positioned platforms alters our ordinary sense of strategic warning, risk, non-kinetic threats, and modified information operations. Let me highlight something in that sentence. Remotely positioned platforms. I'm going to suggest that's your phone, that's your earbuds, that's your Battlefield of Things Alexa. That's the Nest on the device on the wall. All right? These are the platforms of the battlefield of the Internet of Things that we've been talking about. I've explained a little bit about that. Moving on, though, quickly, because I have a ton here to read through. Cognitive warfare. Cognitive warfare is the fight we've got, and we must reorient to meet this challenge, written by Emily Benzbuena and Zach Rogers and Sayanth Troth. Referencing and intended for all corps, of all military corps, to just make them aware. The term cognitive warfare has entered the lexicon over the last couple of years. General David L. Goldfein, United States Air Force, remarked last year, "We are transitioning from wars of attrition to wars of cognition." Neuroscientist James Giordano has described the human brain as a battlefield of the 21st century. Cognitive warfare represents the convergence of all the elements that we have lived restlessly under the catch-all moniker of information warfare since the term's emergence in the 1990s. Cognitive warfare is information warfare, IW, with something added. As we begin to understand more about what has been added, awareness is growing that the Western military and intelligence organizations may have been caught playing the wrong game. As Martin Libicki explained, IW burst onto the scene in the early 1990s in line with the shift from attrition-based to effects-based operations and increasingly digitized and networked infrastructure underpinning contemporary warfare. Internet battlefield of things here, folks, since the 90s. Oh, that's where the internet kind of started, didn't it? Reading on here. Overarched lines of effort in intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. Remember this one, ISR, because it comes up again. Surveillance and reconnaissance, ISR. Electronic warfare, your EW. Psychological operations, with the moniker PSYOPs, and cyber operations that in general raise the need to contend for and take advantage of information flows. As Clint Watts has surmised, where IW described the war of information, cognitive battle space is a war for information as it is transformed into knowledge via the process of cognition. And let me offer here an interjection. The war for information is why it's so important to spread the word that you find true. Why I ask you to spread the word behind the word chain. This is a word of action. You're going to find out paralysis is what they target. They try to target in you. You can't be paralyzed. You have to act, and then you have to act properly. This is a battle speech for information. So if they control what the information is, they win. Why it's important to spread the word behind the woodshed. Okay. Shameless plug. Moving on to the discussion here. Hyperconnectivity created the opportunity to transform IW from a set of episodic activities largely associated with operational lines of effort by military and intelligence practitioners in support of lethal and kinetic efforts on the battlefield into a single continuous effort to disrupt and deny the cognitive condition in which the whole societies are situated. Cognitive warfare gathers together the instruments of IW and takes us into the realm of neuroweapons, defined by Giordano as anything that accesses the brain to contend against others when coordinated and directed in open liberal democratic societies. Cognitive warfare has paid off in spades. As digitized and networked warfare has matured and evolved over the last 25 years, because I've been tying Operation Hindsight 2020 to 9/11 and then to the anthrax and the continuation, you're looking at right at that window, isn't it? Has evolved over the 25 years into a contemporary iteration of multi-domain battle, MDB, it has pursued better observation through superior ISR, the surveillance and reconnaissance, better decision-making through big data and machine learning, and better action through the constant advance of military technical capabilities. Do you hear capacity building there, folks? Do you hear the sustainability terms if you just looked a little bit clearer, a little bit further? Sustainability is not just a UN thing. It's a global approach to attack people. It's a military attack. UN is not what it appears to be, actually. Anyway, moving on here. It's fascinating. Big data. How much have we talked about that? Haven't talked about that a lot. Machine learning, AI. And we're going to find problems with that, and that's going to be another Achilles heel. And they admit to that. And this is the things we start listening for. Where are we going to put our efforts? How do we help protect ourselves when they come against us with this stuff? And we may not actually see it, but we see there's an anomaly in what we see. It doesn't look right. It doesn't feel right. Our gut's not right about it. We have places to go look really fast, so we're not put in a surprise. Moving into the discussion, new article, Cognitive Warfare and the Use of Force. There's actually a thought about it's maybe unethical. Now, we have to look at that very carefully, because I don't know what unethical is in wartime. Everything's, you know, agreeable in war, it seems. You even break the rules and it doesn't matter. Look at the United States outwardly. But cognitive warfare and the use of force, because it's not force. But we return back to who is looking at this. NATO and ATO currently recognizes 5 warfighting domains: land, sea, air, space, and cyberspace. An increasing amount of literature suggests adding the 6th, the cognitive domain. As they shift into looking at you folks, you are the target. Why Covey Swindle was so important? That's what did it. They turned at you. This is not just a cognitive domain. They're after you. And why I thought this was such a big deal that we had the ability to defend ourselves, at least in the United States. And then I found throughout the world that use rule of law and democracy, due process for communicable diseases. But the cognitive domain, getting in your head, and getting you to either act, react, not act, is all important. And to get you to do that, they will use even your distrust to do it, or they're actually looking to get your trust. If you distrust enough that you don't act, they have your paralysis. This is so much a higher level of thought of act, of response and action and condition. It's pretty fascinating just on that level. But moving into the article now, and we try to get through this. Again, NATO's looking at this. NATO's the active club in the world right now, looking to branch out and cause strife everywhere. And so this became important. But we now get to see inside what they're dealing with, what they are discussing amongst themselves. And I'm suggesting to you, if we just attach cognitive warfare as perception management as an attack against you, this is giving us the sum of the plan, if you will. Even if they write as questions, you see, they talk in the past of things happening, right? So this is happening. This has been happening for 25 years. Put your mind back there. What was happening 25 years? What wasn't happening 25 years ago? And then what did happen and continues till today is what I was triggering for you. Yeah, we were triggered. Operation Hindsight 2020, December 2019, and for sure, I think it was January 6th of 2020. Moving into the article here, cognitive warfare takes well-known and novel approaches within information, cyber, and psychological warfare to a new level by not only attempting to alter the way people think, but also how they react to information. Furthermore, methods of cognitive warfare blur the lines between civilian and military targets and arguably shifts the application of force from physical to virtual domains. They go on to define what cognitive warfare is again, and it's important to watch how they develop this. What does it really entail? What is going on with all that? What all things are the elements that they're looking at always? Cognitive warfare attempts to alter people's perceptions, which is the fundamental basis for action. Perception is a product of cognition, which is the mechanism cognitive warfare attempts to tap into. To understand cognitive warfare, it is useful to start with the concept of cognition, possibly defined as, quote, the mental process of acquiring and comprehending knowledge, which implies the consumption, interpretation, or perception of information, as written by Otwell in 2020. Consequently, One possible understanding is that the cognitive domain consists of, quote, perception and reason, in which maneuver is achieved by exploiting the information environment to influence interconnected beliefs, values, and culture of individuals, groups, and or populations. Based on the interpretation of the cognitive domain presented above, Oatwell 2020 defines cognitive warfare as maneuvers in the cognitive domain to establish a predetermined perception among a target audience in order to gain advantage over another party. Another definition has been presented by Rosner and Simon Toy in 2018, who assert that cognitive warfare is manipulation of the public discourse by external elements seeking to undermine social unity and damage public trust in the political system. Again, interjection. That would be terrorism by definition. But at any rate, moving here through, as stated by Barnell, Carter, Singh, and Cao, and Mandraperla, 2020. Look, listen to how close these are to now. They're just now synthesizing all this knowledge that they've been actually applying before. These folks contend that the cognitive warfare is the weaponization of public opinion by an external entity for the purpose of, one, influencing the public and governmental policy, and two, destabilizing public institutions. Lastly, Oliver Bax and Andrew Schwab in 2019 understand cognitive warfare as the strategy that focuses on altering through information means how a target population thinks, and through that, how it acts. In sum, the purpose of cognitive warfare is to bring about the change in the target community's policy via the cognitive process advantageous to attacking the state or non-state actor. Consequently, the aim of cognitive warfare is arguably the same as within the other warfighting domains, to impose one's will upon another state. This is in line with one of the main elements of Clausewitz's definition of war, quote, an act of violence intending to compel our opponent to fulfill our will, as said by Clausewitz in 1968. According to Clausewitz, war is conducted by some second-order purpose. States do not go to war to commit violence, but to impose their will upon other states. Legal and ethical clarity about this issue should therefore be a high priority if the alliance decides to treat the cognitive domain as a military operational domain. And this is an if on two levels. If they do, and whether they will. And so this is an interesting thing. They have a legal and ethical question. They're really running outside of their legal application and knowledge, because this is fitting in a bit of a gray area, though in a way it's not. But I'll move on here with this article. Consequently, the framework suggested for the cyber domain cannot easily be adapted and applied to the cognitive domain in a meaningful way. Concluding this article, a simple sentence here at the end that I'll highlight. Cognitive warfare arguably represents a significant and new challenge to our moral and legal understanding of war. If that doesn't send a cold sweat down your back, I don't know. These people are operating in a place where someone recognizes their challenge on whether this is moral or legal or other factors. They're just doing it already. So moving on to the next article by Kochiro Tagaki, and this article is referenced by another one later. We'll get through to how that works. I'd highlight how they go back and forth. I'll just read through these. You really, those that are interested in the perception management, what the military is doing, how they're coming to terms with it, what their elements are, you need to read these articles, and there's a bunch more that you can find relative to this. If you really want to start understanding maybe what it is I see when I read news, notice, and what my mind starts to do without all this knowledge, without all these texts, what my mind starts to do in analyzing, maybe like seeing when I was young, when we were told about subliminal advertising, I was fascinated by that. I took years studying that as a young, little junior high school. I'm studying subliminal advertising. It fascinated me that people would deceive other people like that. And yet, this is like the roots of some of this. Perception management. How they get different facets, elements of your senses to speak against you, and you don't even know what's going on. But the future, now they're focusing on an adversary for the United States because these folks, I guess, got money to write that article to tell the United States or UK how to protect themselves against their adversary, Russia and China. So this is also telling you and predicting these articles are written to focus NATO outward beyond the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Back to this. Mr. Tagaki writes, the future of China cognitive warfare, the lessons from the war in Ukraine. With the development of AI, the neuroscience, and digital applications like social media, senior officials and strategists in the Chinese People's Liberation Army, PLA, claim that in the future, it will be possible to influence the enemy's brain to affect human cognition directly. Doing so creates the possibility of subduing the enemy without a fight, either by technical or informational means. What is cognitive warfare? I'll go back to the technical. The technical would be more like we talked, listen to the very first article explaining there has been this electronic warfare, this type of reach at a distance, spooky action at a distance on people's brains, done electronically, done audially, mechanically. But moving back to here, Chinese are looking at this and analyzing it. Remember, we were talking about recently the Chinese changing their position. They brought in a new ambassador, foreign minister, to make it look, they looked a little, try to make them look a little different. This is all that public perception management that's going on. This is more of a technical and informational setup. What is cognitive warfare by their view? Chinese theorists describe cognitive warfare as using public opinion, psychological, and legal means to achieve victory. In the line of Sun Tzu's dictum that supreme excellence consists of breaking the enemy's resistance without fighting, China has long considered that defeating the enemy without physical combat is ideal. The PLA, Political Work Regulations, when revised in 2003, outlined the three battles to be conducted by the PLA. The three battles consisted of public opinion warfare to influence domestic and international public opinion, psychological warfare to shock and demoralize enemy soldiers and civilians, and legal warfare to gain international support through the international and domestic law. Thus, all three battles are closely related to cognitive warfare. Let me interject. Remove China and put the United States government in that phrase, and what they're looking and what they're doing is what you see in Covey swindle. Back to the article. Much work published by Chinese strategists over the past two decades, consistent with the United States view of when it was implementing this stuff, over the past two decades have been based on the idea that war takes place in the physical domain of land, sea, air, and space, the information domain of communication networks and information in it, and the domain of human cognition, which consists of both the leader's will and public opinion. I mean, how many times I've been talking about this, and we were talking last week about the Vietnam War and how they're bringing that in now, and the United States is trying to move this thing with Ukraine out into the world, what Ukraine might be looking like Vietnam, that this comes in again as a thing to be recognized. Fighting in the cognitive environment directly affects the brain's influencing emotions, motives, judgments, and actions of, and even controlling the enemy's brain. As an engine of cognition, the brain would become the main battlefield of future warfare. The ability to control the brain is the key to the combat in the most critical cognition domains of future warfare. I need to interject again here quickly. The warfare, you're being attacked in Covey swindle directly. That's the war against you. Don't put this out there. When you're listening to what I'm reading, put this, they're already attacking you in these domains. On this domain, they got people to do certain things. They got people to not do certain things. And there's like three or four different steps I can see deeper as I read through all this information that you should be able to directly apply these concepts that they attribute to China and what they're doing to the United States already. This concept of cognitive warfare, it's right, the author writes, is further, the author's right, this concept of cognitive warfare is further reinforced by its integration with intelligentized warfare, which is China's new military strategy referred to in 2019, in addition to its existing military strategy of informationized warfare. Intelligentized warfare focuses on using artificial intelligence and is characterized by four key features: increased information processing capabilities, rapid decision-making, the use of swarms, and cognitive warfare. United States and its allies as democratic countries need to enhance their own theories of cognitive warfare. Influencing the cognitive domain in other countries requires understanding their culture, identifying targets, and creating a strategic narrative. Let me reread that. And creating strategic narratives tailored to those targets' characteristics. In cognitive warfare, information is ammunition, and the right bullet must be fired at the right time and place. Let me just remind you of the modernization of the Smith-Month Act to be able to propagandize to you is speaks to me in that paragraph. Moving on to another paragraph, part cognitive warfare needs to be effectively integrated into operations in land, sea, and air, space, and cyber domains. Coordination between cognitive warfare and other operations is essential because the means of influencing an opponent's perception include not only the transmission and disclosure of information, but also intimidation and deterrence through the actions of physical assets, as well as the digital dissemination of information. To incorporate cognitive warfare into existing operations, targeting procedures can be helpful and may allocate multiple means to affect the enemy's cognition. Let me interject here, Event 201 through John Hopkins. Okay, start putting this stuff into play as your mind, hopefully your mind goes there. Put this stuff into play. This is not just writing to somewhere out there, even though it was just 2020, 2021, just before. This is actually in play. And we get the insight that it's been in place since for at least 25 years in this thing we're up against that changed the United States of America. The first evidence of which was the PATRIT Act, where they made everybody a misdemeanor and a terrorist through a deception. And I can't get past the idea that the military let that happen and did it or allowed it to happen. And they went and done it at 9/11. Moving on, new article by David Pappalardo. Win the War Before the War, a French perspective on cognitive warfare. This is a scenario they set up in 2050. The society, listen now, the future being predicted, if you will, but we see a bits of the elements of that today, which makes this plausible. The writing, the author goes on, it is 2050, and society is divided into an archipelago of community-based alternative reality zones. The French armed forces are tasked with securing reality in the face of an adversary capable of modifying collective behavior on a large scale through actions of deception and subversion. This was the scenario posed last summer to the French Ministry of the Armed Forces by the, quote, Red Team program that links science fiction authors with the military. Maybe The Matrix is not a movie, folks. Cognitive warfare is a multidisciplinary approach combining social sciences and new technologies to directly alter the mechanism of understanding the decision-making in order to destabilize or paralyze an adversary. There it is. Your lack of action, your paralysis on a thing is what they use. They try to get you to do. Silence is not acting is not an option here. In other words, it aims to hack the heuristics of the human brain in an attempt to win the war before the war. Let me offer the word waiver in the beginning here. Cognitive warfare is a multidisciplinary approach. Remember, the sustainability approach is multidisciplinary. They keep promoting that as some big deal. Well, it's only for them, not for you. You going on. Using false information to gain an advantage over one's opponent is nothing new in the history of strategy. Churchill, for example, is said to have told Stalin, quote, in wartime, the truth was so precious that it should always be attended by a bodyguard of lies. Information operations have long been incorporated into more traditional military operations to produce effects across traditional warfighting domains. Renewed competition amplified by digital and social transformations. The heading moving into the what they're doing. You see social transformation as a word. Yes, again, these are sustainability terms. There's really no difference here in how this is being applied. It's just who's doing the application. Going on here to read the new momentum of cognitive warfare acknowledges the current digital and social transformations of warfare, which increase both the magnitude of the traditional information operations in the range of audiences. Targets are no longer limited to political and military decision makers. Broader populations are also susceptible to manipulation at a large scale and may be leveraged to influence national decisions. In response to this dynamic, David Rohnfeld and John Archia have recently argued in favor of a more comprehensive information strategy in the United States to better take into account the emergence of the noosphere, quote, a collective form of intelligence enabled by digital information revolution. According to these authors, the essence of the United States strategy should now emphasize weaponized narratives as a key decisive factor to win, quote, in the realm of the mind. After all, narratives are heuristics used by the brain to process and organize information so as to, quote, make, close quote, sense of any of a given context and create meaning. As such, they are central to cognition. And I just need to interject, your narrative in your mind, your heuristics that they're utilizing to defeat you are tempered when you go to an objective basis. So I tell you to go to that, the rule of law, if you will, due process, because that's the black and white, what's written. It's not a narrative. And so you can break your susceptibility to this thing they're targeting here. The narratives we hear today are what they're doing here, is what they're talking about. The narrative, the story they want to lay out is the narrative that they're attempting to get you to make some form of decision on, whether that, and then get you to either act like they want you to do and behave the way they want, or to not be paralyzed against that attack. Moving on now here. In sum, the fight against weaponized narratives and cognitive aggression has become more essential than ever in the face of a renewed strategic competition amplified by the digital revolution. It requires a broader approach, cognitive warfare, combining social sciences and new technologies across all domains to operate simultaneously at the level of information, narratives, and the human brain. Cognitive warfare through an exploitation of competing brain functions, the heading cognition refers to the mechanisms governing reason, emotions, and sensory experiences that allow us to understand the world, form an internal representation of it, and ultimately act in it. It is therefore a major element of the decision-making process during which our brain brings into competition different functions. Our intuitive heuristics, which can be mobilized quickly but are susceptible to biases, and our logical strategies, which are slower and more costly in terms of energy. The art of using technologies to alter the cognition of human targets, most often without their knowledge and without the knowledge of those who would be in charge of avoiding, minimizing, or controlling the desired effects, or whose possible control would be outdated or too late. Cognitive warfare is essentially, but not exclusively, concerned with command and control of operations to enable decision superiority. Let me go back to the paragraph right before that. This is, again, a repeat, why you go to the objective basis, the black and white. You get rid of that heuristic. You get rid of the ability to be dumbfounded as they target your mind messing around with things where it's a little slower for you to go to the black and white. Your imagination can run quick. Moving into another paragraph here. The first concerns that need to guard against our own individual and collective cognitive dysfunctions. This requires the knowledge and identification, as far as possible, of the cognitive biases that precondition our mental patterns. According to the French philosopher Jean de Maison's beautiful formula, quote, to think is first to think against oneself. As the late Robert Jervis has also explained, decision makers tend to fit incoming information into their existing theories and images. Misunderstanding the ideas or values of the adversary, the presumption that he will see us as we see ourselves, and more generally, the contempt for others, are all powerful contributors to the instability in the conflictual relations. Beyond individuals, bureaucracies are also vulnerable to what the psychologist Irvin Janis called groupthink, particularly when group's members are similar in the background and when the group is insulated from outside opinions. We hear the echo chamber here, folks, social echo chambers. Anyway, moving on, the groupthink leads to ignoring alternatives, dehumanizing other groups, and ultimately to a deterioration of, quote, mental efficiency, reality testing, and moral judgment, close quote. Education and training are therefore crucial to hedge against our own individual and collective cognitive bugs, requiring a permanent questioning and cross-examining of ourselves, buttressed by social and psychological approach to conflictuality. Moreover, it is necessary to emancipate ourselves from the utopian idea of a perfect understanding of the battlefield when made possible by technology alone. Indeed, technology means do not always dissipate the fog of war. On the contrary, the larger availability of data can create the fog of more and add a complexity to the detriment of military efficiency if we do not succeed in mastering a flow of information. Boy, isn't that my complaint right now, how fast things are coming at us. It's just a fog of more. How to parse through it to get to the core of it. Moreover, biases can also be found in the algorithms of databases used to make a future predictable. It may result to a form of cognitive dissonance. They claim here you can predict the future by algorithms, folks. A very important statement right there. Therefore, it is the quality of the organization that must prevail over technological solutions in the practice of information. And this is where I was telling you that the technology has to go to someone's mind, physically a man or a woman making a decision. It can't run on its own. They acknowledge that right there. The second line of efforts concerns defenses against permanent information aggression and the opportunistic exploitation of our cognitive biases by an adversary, which can constrain or distort our decision-making process and paralyze us. Again, it's very important that they're claiming it's important not to be paralyzed, not to be silent, not to be non-responsive. This becomes a theme throughout these discussions. The second is linked to our societies. The free market of ideas also comes with a nefarious alternative facts, and fake news is a post-truth world exasperated by technology, as we talked about post-truth world. As we talked, the Chinese recognize this. I mentioned that a couple weeks ago. Moving on to the next article, I'm trying to get ahead of this. It's a lot to go through. Cognitive warfare. NATO is planning a war for people's minds. Since 2020, NATO has pursued plans for psychological warfare that must stand on an equal footing with the military alliance's five previous areas of operation, land, water, air, space, and cyberspace. It is the battleground of public opinion. NATO documents speak of cognitive warfare. Mental warfare is what they mean, folks. It's for your mind. What they want to do is get your behavior, control your behavior. They talk about all this here. You've heard it. To be victorious in war, one must also win the battle of the public opinion. We've talked about this, and Putin having to get his people on board. Biden has to get his people on board for what? The future of the war they want? Yeah, this is coming up. I think if I don't get to it, I think that's what that balloon thing's about, in part. This has been carried out for more than 100 years with increasing modern tools to so-called soft power techniques. It's battle for the public opinion. These describe all of the psychological tools of the influence by which people can be guided in such a way that they themselves are not aware of this control. The American political scientist Joseph Nye thus defined the soft power as, quote, the ability to persuade others to do what one wants without using violence or coercion. Distrust of governments and the military is increasing, while NATO is stepping up its efforts to use increasingly sophisticated psychological warfare in the battle of people's minds and hearts. The main program for this is cognitive warfare. With the psychological weapons of this program, man himself is to be declared the new theater of war, the so-called human domain or human sphere. One of NATO's first documents on the plans of NATO's in September 2020, as a NATO's sixth domain of operation was written on behalf of the NATO Innovation Hub, iHub, Folks, remember innovation, sustainability. If you don't see the consistency here in just the terms that are being used, moving on to the discussion, the essay tells several fictional stories and concludes with a made-up speech by the United States president who explains to his listeners how cognitive warfare works and why anyone can get involved. Quote, today's advances in nanotechnology, biotechnology, information technology, and cognitive science, driven by seemingly unstoppable advance in the troika of artificial intelligence, big data, and the digital addiction of our civilization, have created a far more disturbing prospect. An integrated fifth pillar where everyone, unbeknownst to him or her, acts according to the plans of one of our adversaries. Let me interject. What if that adversary is your government? Moving on here to read. Each individual's thoughts and feelings are increasingly at the center of this new war. Quote, you are the disputed territory. Let me repeat that. You, with emphasis, you are the disputed territory wherever you are and whoever you are. In addition, there is to be lamented the, quote, steady erosion of the morale of the population, close quote. Cole and Guider thus argue that the human domain is the greatest vulnerability. They know you better than yourself, folks. I just interject that right there. Reading on, this area of operation or domain would consequently be the basis for all of the battlefields, whether they be lake, land, water, airspace, or cyberspace, to be controlled. Therefore, the two authors urge NATO to act quickly and consider the human spirit as NATO's sixth domain of operations. It's not just how you think and how you're going to act. It's your spirit, folks. If you didn't think this is mind, body, and spirit is a part of this whole battle, good and evil thing, yes. Participatory propaganda, another heading in this article. Almost at the same time, the former French official chief of innovation officer at IHUB, François de Cluzel, was working in the comprehensive strategy paper Cognitive Warfare that was published in IHUB in January 2021. Instead of using imaginary scenarios, as the one I previously quoted about the president, a president, de Cluzel wrote a detailed analysis of the War of the Minds. Like the authors of the sixth dimension of NATO operations, he emphasizes that trust is the goal. This can be won or destroyed in the informational warfare or through psyops, etc., psychological warfare. Cluzel emphasizes that everyone is involved in this new form of manipulation and that the goal is to protect NATO's human capital. The area of application refers to the entire human environment, whether friend or foe. Quote, the cognitive warfare may be the missing element that enables the transition from military victory on the battlefield to the lasting political success. It's the end goal, changing you, your society politically. The human domain may well be the decisive factor. I think that's we'll stop there. Moving now on, there's a ton more to read. I want to get to changing belief behaviors. The winner of a strategy that was done through John Hopkins of no less through the NATO Innovation Competition of 20, which was started in 2017, was to look at how to change beliefs and behaviors. And a company won that. The company was named Verifix. The motto they have is, we measure beliefs to predict and change behavior, which was developed in a platform with which it is possible to identify so-called nudges and or unconscious psychological nudges on the internet. The Verifix platform has been in use for years and working with several governments and large companies, according to the head of John Fuiz, who has close family ties in the United States security apparatus. For him, cognitive warfare is about changing beliefs. Changing beliefs, folks. You want to change your beliefs? How about change your faith? How about change your culture? What do you identify to? Well, moving on here, his software can analyze these changes within your military, within your population, and within a foreign population, as he explained to the competition's judges. This company won. We have the link to their website. Remember, I talked about news, UK government nudging their society to do what they wanted to be done. Is likely one of the several governments that already works with this company. So pull the news together that I tell you to show you that it's acting. It's in action. It's not just some news article out there, just some unconnected thing. This is part of the global attack done by militaries. NATO, UK is part of NATO. They're already using this technology. But these articles since 2021 sound like they're barely getting a handle on it. No, this is some of the people writing about it now. We see from the website of Verifix, again, the PH, the P's are silent, I guess. It's, even the H is silent on this one. We just changed the letter, Verifix. We measure beliefs to predict and change behavior. In the middle of their webpage, you see, our technology automates new behavioral science research methodologies, enabling us to remove the noise of social signaling and cultural influence to reveal what groups of people believe. With that knowledge, they go to work on you through ways you don't even know are working on you, your interaction, your participation, to get the end result they want, the end thing, the outcome they want. The disinformation age, another one of the last articles here, I believe, to go through. Paul Ottewell, done in 2022 again, this recent summation of things. This article analyzes the territory in which the battle of strategic narratives is fought, the cognitive domain, and the nature of the battle itself, cognitive warfare. And this article goes through, it is a relative to the UK, and it goes through putting the UK as a diminished in how it's responding to this condition and what it needs to start to focus on in order to bring itself up. This almost looked like propaganda, like the UK doesn't know what it's doing. NATO, relative to the UK, doesn't know what it's doing. And this is what they're going to have to do to catch up, when in fact you're hearing all this stuff from NATO is absolutely ahead of the game and actually working. One of the points here, they actually pointed out opportunity. Pursuing a propaganda campaign online is both cost-effective and low-risk, since such activity is sufficiently ambiguous and unattributable to avoid crossing the threshold likely to trigger a security response from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. What are they talking about? Well, that's the title, Article 5. Probably under Article 51 of the United Nations Convention for Self-Defense. So they understand that there's legal ramifications to what they do. They're not ignorant of that. And it's being promoted like they're behind the scenes on this, and that UK is kind of they're moving slow. In fact, they're not at all. They in this article, they have anchor definitions. Again, understanding the terminology, they go through saying cognitive warfare is a competition within the cognitive domain. Existing definitions suffer from the negative bias that ignore the possibility that cognitive warfare can be waged defensively and constructively, as well as offensively and destructively. A neutral definition of cognitive warfare is as follows. Maneuvers in the cognitive domain to establish a predetermined perception among a target audience and to gain advantage over another party. Russia's cognitive warfare doctrine is well documented under various pseudonyms, but the foundational concept is known as Maskirovka. Maskirovka is a Russian word for military deception. It is the mechanism by which the Kremlin tries to manipulate target audiences, a doctrine that it explains the general how more than it does the specific what. The latter, the what, is the realm of reflexive control theory. Now, I need to interject. Remember, I've talked about what they've invoked in the United States now, and more so around the world as well, but more in the United States, is so-called reflexive law. Where do you think they're getting, United States judiciary is getting reflexive law, when we see this definition of what Maskirovka is, a military doctrine for military deception? And they're using reflexive law, which is not law at all, in this new sustainable, less violent usurpation. Moving into the article, I just need to point that out. Realm of reflexive control theory is reflexive law in your courts today in the United States and probably elsewhere that they're not telling you about. This guides the Kremlin's choice of what a reality it wishes its target audience to perceive. So you people that write that know how to do jurisdictional challenges correctly, not all the ones I hear, but some, you're the ones that are going to be the problem. Because what they need is a reality that it wishes to target audience to perceive. They want you to perception management as to the justice you're getting. They just want to make sure you felt that you got justice. Well, moving into the articles, more important here, like active measures that has evolved through the decades, which roots in the Soviet Union under Joseph Stalin, but its fruits lie in contemporary Russian thinking. Timothy L. Thompson, definition for is rigorous. Reflexive control is the means of conveying to a partner or an opponent specially prepared information to incline him to involuntarily make the predetermined decision desired by the infiltrator of the action. You heard the Hegelian dialectic, folks, being worked in your court? So back to this. The reflex refers to how the opponent's deliberation are steered in such a way as to choose a course of action that unwittingly is against their own best interest. At its heart, reflexive control pursues control of the enemy's decision-making process. Exercise reflexive control over the state's vox populi, however contemporary, this would render acutely vulnerable the collective threat perception. In the long term, cognitive warfare is easier to wage than it is to defend. The party with which this greatest strategy patience has the advantage. This is an asymmetric with two axes. The first relates to an audience sensing. Defending nations must understand who constitutes their vulnerable audience if a counter disinformation campaign is to be properly targeted. An aggressor need not be so meticulous and may change strategies at will in the quest for one that delivers results. Can I interject here and say, does that sound like Covey Swindle definition changes on the fly? Go back. The second axis relates to tenacity. The defending state must prevail over every attempt to influence its democratic process, while the aggressor can achieve lasting advantage from a single success. Let me interject. When you are the domain, when you are the territory to take, that's you having to be able to address each and every attack. And the aggressor against you only has to beat you once. You only have to have a single success. Why I've told you to back off and put the obligation on the other before you even need to start making a decision. Speaks to that right there. Going on, they give this neat analogy relative to communicable disease in this article, which I thought was prescient as well relative to the Covey Swindle and then how you can apply what I'm reading here to that. Just as an epidemiologist will look to identify the groups of hosts that are most susceptible to a pathogen, so a defensive strategy for the cognitive domain would need to identify the audience most inclined to be persuaded by any disinformation campaign. The common aim is to focus intervention efforts where they will have the most impact on spreading the contagion. What if the contagion is an idea? What if the contagion is a philosophy, a belief? This is what they're talking about. What if it's the thought that there's a contagion that doesn't exist, like we heard in Covey Swindle? What if there's an idea to persuade people that there's a remedy, a cure, a control for it that doesn't exist? The term target audience is not helpful since it presumes that deceptive message is hyper-targeted and that the agent provocateur can be sure by whom their message will be seen, and of course that its viral spread will take. The more significant cohort of cognitive warfare, therefore, is the vulnerable audience, those persons most likely to be persuaded by a given disinformation campaign and act upon the persuasion in a way that influences the public agenda. Let me offer again, even if it paralyzes you into inaction and you do nothing against it, that's what they're doing. They say act here. Remember, paralysis is another condition that they work toward. How is this effectuated? Therefore, a whole of government defense strategy in the cognitive domain should include digital literacy as a central tenet. Let me offer to that, Stephen. What if they understand you are digitally ignorant? And then what if we see that the whole of government is what you saw in the rollout of the Covey Swindle at warp speed? No jurisdiction of any government stopped it. Talk about the whole of government. We're talking every government of the world. is what you see spoken to right here in this document. They mentioned in this document about a list of things, so much to read here. They mentioned at the discussion where they're focused on different aspects of argument, different aspects of being able to persuade. Number three here in this article, they bring up relative to this target audience and this digital literacy. They also have literacy on just general communication literacy. Prevarication in this policy area may represent a pyrrhic victory of ethos over pathos and logos. This is speaking directly to what Aristotelian style rhetoric. I'm going to have a link there. You can read a little bit about this. This is an interesting analysis as well. Your argument is not enough. It's a victory where the ethos it's destructive of the other two. You don't win when you go through this, is what they're trying to promote, that if the UK doesn't act on moving forward on cognitive warfare, then they're going to lose. When in fact, I think they're on the forefront already. I've got you a link here. We can go through it. This explains a little bit of what they're talking about there. This document in cognitive warfare is dealing in the rhetoric of your mind as well, and how to convince you. One of the links I'll give you, it states, what are ethos, pathos, and logos, examples of how to use them during an argument. People will often say whatever is necessary to win. If that is the case, then they would certainly need to understand the three modes of persuasion, also commonly known as the three rhetorical appeals, ethos, pathos, and logos. In short, these three words refer to the three main methods that a person can use to speak or write persuasively. As you're about to find out as you read this article, the modes of persuasion are important because a speaker who knows how to effectively use them will have a significant advantage over someone who doesn't. The terms ethos, pathos, and logos and the theory of their use can be traced back to ancient Greece and philosophy of Aristotle. Aristotle used these three concepts in his explanation of rhetoric, or the art of influencing the thought and conduct of an audience. For Aristotle, the three modes of persuasion specifically referred to the three major parts of argument: the speaker, or ethos, the argument itself, logos, and the audience, the pathos. In particular, Aristotle focused on the speaker's character, the logic and reason presented by the argument, and the emotional impact the argument had on the audience. While they have ancient roots, these modes of persuasion are alive and well today. But the simple ethos refers to a persuasion based on the credibility of the authority of the speaker, and pathos refers to the persuasion based on emotion, and logos refers to the persuasion based on logic and reason. And if you can't see what the strings of these they were pulling during Covey swindle, you need to really start thinking about how this perception management went, and what they were actually doing was cognitive warfare as they attacked the populations. In particular, for the United States, we have powerful positions we could take that none of us did. If I could just broadly state, none of us did, that were there to protect us and out this and stop this war against us. And then out right now, we have the evidence of outing the military for never having given the authority to do what they did under a civilian authority. We don't use the official's dereliction. The civilian authority is those black and white processes that were done for communicable disease that were violated. I hope today was a little bit instructive. What we're up against, we are the attacked territory. We are the battlefield. And maybe how to deal with that. Until next time, tech diffs or nature willing.
That's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
for opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.